Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to this podcast this afternoon. I'd like to introduce Mr. John Breyer. He is the co-founder of BotRx, or BotRx. John, tell us about your, it's a leading cybersecurity company. John, tell us about your background, your history, how you got started in cybersecurity. You seem to have a very deep and rich background in this area. Just tell us everything that you've done in your life, and we'd be interested to hear all about it.
Great. Thanks, Robbie. Yeah, thanks for having me on the podcast, and happy to join. So maybe start with a little bit about my biography. I've done a lot of startups. This is probably my 9th or 10th startup. I started originally back in, late 80s and early 90s with my first startup, which is called Compaq Computer, which is probably familiar to most people, and building actually some of the first laptops. So I've always been in kind of the network and computing industry since the very, very beginning. My first job out of college was actually with Nortel Networks. Since then, I've done a lot of other startups, everything from hardware companies as well as software. Where I really got started into the network security side was back in the early 2000 timeframe, around 2001. I was actually hired as a consultant on a project with Nokia, and at the time, Nokia was looking for a way to do email on feature-type phones and some of their early phones in that time frame. So obviously, this was before BlackBerry really came to fruition, and what they actually had was a BlackBerry Symbian client for Nokia phones. So it was really interesting. That's really where I started. Actually, the guy who was at Nokia that I was working with on that project, he ended up being my boss at Mobileye. And so in those days, in the 2000, early 2000 timeframe, mobility was really all the rave. And actually very similar to what we're seeing on the network security side today in the explosion of threats on the mobile side. So, and really, as applications moved into mobile, there was more and more threats that evolved as well, as we naturally see with most industries. So from some of those early days with the BlackBerry client, I then joined MobileIron. MobileIron was, we were in that very first phase of mobility in the mid to late applications. I was running basically the application and network groups at MobileIron. So it really taught me a lot and kind of led well into the job I'm doing today. So from mobile device security, then quickly moved into application security and the online world. And that's where I was with Shape Security and obviously now BotRx. And it's very similar. It's actually interesting, the parallels. It's very similar to what we saw on the mobile device security side. You have this explosion of applications. You have this explosion of APIs where people are doing more and more work through APIs, and we can talk about that a little bit later. But in general, it's a whole new world out there, right? People are doing a lot more business online, but as they move to online business, the security infrastructure, unfortunately, is a lot of times the last piece that people think about, and we have to go back and correct those errors. So it's a brave new world, but it's also a really good spot to be in the market today.
Okay, excellent. Now, can you tell us about your journey into BotRx and what made you focus or motivated you to focus on bot migration? But before you get into that, can you explain to our audience what a bot is? Because I don't know if a lot of people really understand the technicalities behind it. Can you walk us through a little bit more on that, please?
Sure. So bot mitigation is the field that's been categorized by Gartner. It's an interesting area. Unfortunately, you or I and other consumers use the same password over and over again for their applications. And because of that, the bad guys know this, and they basically test those credentials. So, whether it's user and password is 1234, they'll test that on every site in the world until they find a hit, and then they'll sell that information off to the next guy in the chain. And again, we can go into a little bit more detail, but that's probably the idea of what we call bots. So it's really any kind of automation. It ranges from scripts, just scanners. There are scanners that were built to help IT guys out in the world today, and unfortunately now those scanners are being misused. A lot of the tools that are being used today by the bad guys were actually developed by QA to test websites. So if you think about testing your website, you want to do the same thing over and over again, and that's really what a bot does, right? It does a really good job of doing the same thing over and over again to either test vulnerability or to test passwords, et cetera. And that's where we run into all the problem. Unfortunately, we're you know, testing against our automation that we've created to help us, and that has been used to feed us. But that's kind of what a bot is. For hopefully that was clear enough.
Yeah, just a quick question here. Like, you know, everybody hears about, you know, like ransomware, you know, phishing, you know, crypto jack and crypto mining, and now a new threat there's called deepfakes. How do you rank bots on the cyber threat landscape as an emerging threat? Is it something you that is used a lot by the cyber attacker, or you don't see too many attacks? What's the ranking when compared to the other threat variants that are out there?
So email phishing and those type of phishing attacks are still very prevalent, and I think those are, you know, probably one of the number ones that are out there today. You know, what we do doesn't help with that, and those are really geared toward training and toward people understanding not to click on links, right? So if you look at most of the phishing attacks that happen out there, it's really teaching your people inside to be vigilant, to look out for, you know, links that are nonsensical, strange emails, same structure emails, those types of things. It's not something that where we protect against, but I think those are still a huge threat out there today. And unfortunately, the primary way that people are focusing on those are actually on training. The next step, if you look at the OWASP top 10 that are published by the government, those are really the key ones that we focus on, and also the ones that are probably the second highest in order magnitude as far as loss of money and dollars. And those are where we see, you know, the breaches, some very well-known breaches, which I'm sure everyone here has seen, where credentials are being stolen from everything from healthcare company, insurance companies. Facebook has been hit a number of times. Those online threats are really probably the number one out there today. And that's where we focused our efforts at BotRx and where our tool is actually geared to work.
Okay. Yeah, so tell us now how you kind of, sorry to sideways out there, but how did you venture into BotRx and what made you motivated to start your company?
So from our standpoint, I mean, having been at a number of security companies and seen what's being done, most of us, you know, to make money have focused really on the large enterprise side and feeding that environment with solutions. Unfortunately, what we saw at BotRx and what I saw personally was there was a huge area of the network that was actually unprotected, which is really the small to medium businesses. And again, our solution works in the large enterprise, but what we really try to give people is that small to medium enterprise, some kind of solution to help them out. That's largely unprotected. It doesn't get a lot of press, but literally the small to medium business guys are getting attacked more relentlessly than even the large enterprise side. And the main reason for that is they're not protected today at all. They're not thinking about security. They don't understand security that well. It's you or me, a small business that starts up that spins up a website just to get some notice, or they want to begin doing business online. They really think about security last. So from BotRx standpoint, we really wanted to make something that fit in well into that model to help protect pretty much everyone. We think protecting from the bottom up to the top guys is probably the best place to start because that's where the attackers are focusing their attention. If we can help the small enterprise, it'll definitely help the large enterprise as well. And you know, we just really wanted to give back to the industry. We have a lot of great information, a lot of data that we get shared from our customers on the small side. And we really just want to give back and try to help protect everyone if we can. It's part of our mission statement as a company is to really give, you know, give some security solutions back. We give a lot of stuff away for free just to help that cause along.
Okay. Now, what are the most common bot threats that you see out there? I mean, we kind of talked about this just a few minutes ago, but like, what are the more specific kind of threats and attacks that you see in data?
Sure. So credential stuffing is probably the main one. However, we see a common thread in the overall attack. So most attacks actually start with scanners. So those scanners that I mentioned earlier, if you think about it, if I have a network infrastructure set up, I run a scanner myself as an IT guy to understand, do I have the latest updates? Am I vulnerable at attacks? Am I vulnerable for certain attacks? So that whole scanner technology and it's things like Acunetix and a few common scanners that are out there, those are actually being used by bad guys first. So the first thing that we see, and to give the best example, we spin up honeypots all over the world. So So a honeypot is nothing more than a fake site that has a desirable target for attackers. So I'll give you one common use case is we have a honeypot that's basically built around gift cards, which are really commonly attacked by bad guys. So we spin up these honeypots, and then we look at the traffic that comes across to them. We don't advertise them. We don't let people know they're there. So the very first thing that we see are scanners. So the scanners come in, they analyze the site, and they determine, hey, what kind of site is this? They categorize it. They do detailed dissection of the site, you know, what network it's on, what's the backbone, is it WordPress, is it some other kind of website infrastructure, what kind of protection do they have in front of it. All that's available through those scanners. So then right after the scanners come in about a week later, then we normally see attacks on the login page for that particular site. So the most common one is WordPress. So for every WordPress domain or WordPress site out there, if you just do the WordPress domain, /login. There's more details. I don't want to help attackers out too much, but in general, there's a way to just login.
I'm glad because I have my website's WordPress. So, thank you for not giving that. Sorry to interrupt like that.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, yeah, we try not to give too much, but right after we see the scanners, then comes the attack on the login page, and basically what they're trying to do is get into that login page for WordPress and either install malicious code on there or to take over the login in general. And sometimes they just camp on it. So a lot of sites, when they first start up, people just analyze and understand what's actually happening. They see what the admin does. They see what other tools they're going to install. And they just camp on it until they can actually sell it to the next guy in chain. Because a lot of the attacks that we see online are really syndicates. So one guy specializes in the scanning portion I just mentioned. He'll sell a list of vulnerable sites to the next guy in the chain who will do the credential stuffing. He then sells the known good credentials to the next guy in the chain who goes in and actually steals the credential or steals the goods that are being sold or creates some other kind of scam to actually attack that website. But in general, that scanner followed by the attack on any kind of login page, it doesn't have to be the WordPress login, by the way. So it can be just any login that's on that page. You know, if it's, hey, log in to create account, log in to get the latest information or price reduction, whatever that is, that would be the next step. And then a lot of it also, the scanners are looking for competitive sites. So probably the most well-known scanner out there is really Amazon and Google. They constantly analyze pricing and will adjust their pricing accordingly. If they see something that's being sold on a large site, they'll, you know, normally adjust their pricing to make sure they have the lowest one that's out there in the market. So that, you know, that's a pretty well-known use case for most scanners out there, but the attacks go much deeper. And so I would say our top four that we see are scanners followed by account login, price scraping and scraping of information on the site, and then getting behind that login page, doing account creation and a couple of other nefarious things that you get behind the account side as well.
Okay. Can you expand a little bit more on what credential stuffing is exactly? I mean, I've heard the term out there, and I'm sure some people in our audience have probably heard of it, but could you explain it in a little bit more detail what exactly it is?
Certainly. So when we talk about credential stuffing, it's sometimes called password guessing or, you know, so it usually starts with probably the most simple use case to understand. If most of us have a login as our username, or we may use admin or admin1, admin2 as our username. And then everyone thinks, hey, I create some crazy password. No one's going to be able to guess it. You know, and some people just use simple ones because they think that their password that they create is not going to be, you know, it's maybe for a simple site that where they get their news. And they think, well, I'll just use a very basic password that I can remember because it's only a news site. No one could ever worry about getting hacked there. Unfortunately, what the bad guys do is they test those passwords. So they know your email is your username or that you're using admin or something like that. They'll literally go on and guess the password on that site using automation. So they'll create a script or they'll use one of the common password guessing tools out there. There's everything from, you know, things. Again, I won't give some names to help people out, but in general, scripts or fully automated tools, including VPN that are out there today that you can just purchase for $20. That will do that guessing for you. And most of those tools can guess around 2,000 passwords per second. So that's the benchmark that you have out there. And then if they want to guess more than that, it's not that they can't go up higher. All they do is add another server. So they'll say, okay, you know, whatever your email is, password 1234. Then they'll go 1234 5, 1234 5 6. They'll just keep guessing. And imagine you could, you know, spinning up 5 servers, you can guess roughly about 10,000 in a second. And out of that 10,000, you can imagine I can test a million combinations in roughly about 1,000 seconds. So it's a really basic math built. And usually the guy who's doing the password guessing or that credential stuffing attack is not the guy who's actually going to attack your website. So they'll scan and have routines for, and I'm not kidding, we see the same scanners that are attacking multiple sites throughout the world. Those scanners will test credentials on a single website in the world. And there's roughly, I think, the latest numbers I saw was about 1.8 billion sites. They will literally scroll through them. They don't hit all of them, but they'll hit the high-value target ones. And they'll create a list of this site, this login page, these credentials work. They post those for sale on the dark web. If people aren't familiar with the dark web, that's a place where you can go buy pretty much anything that's illegal. So that dark web stuff is all available online. You can buy the logins for banks, for specific targets like Amazon. Netflix is a huge one. You can buy, you know, Netflix accounts that are verified. We call it verified account, where the username and password name works across the board. You know, all the accounts that people have that think they have no value, like, hey, I don't care if my Netflix account gets hacked. Well, it not only hurts Netflix, but it does hurt you, because most likely you're using those same Netflix logins on other accounts like your banking, et cetera. So, you know, it's a wild west out there when it comes to it, but you wouldn't think that people would have the time of day to actually go and test every single website in the world, but that's all these guys do is make these routines and have all the time of the day to actually go out and do these attacks.
Okay, interesting. No, businesses here in America, corporate America, you know, since I wouldn't say we're used to it, but, you know, there's been so much content delivered out on, you know, what a phishing email looks like, you know, like what the ransomware is. And so I think companies and individuals and employees are a lot more cognizant of what to look for. Does it mean that they'll actually, you know, be proactive and, you know, not click on a phishing email, but at least there's a lot more information out there now than there was before about what a phishing email is and, you know, how to avoid it, so forth and so forth. But I haven't seen too much information out there on bot threats, like what to look for, how to avoid it. What's your take on that, and what are some of the most common threats and attacks that you see? What I meant to say is, are there any common themes that companies should be aware of that would signal a bot attack? What are the red flags, you know, that an employee or a business owner or whoever should be on the lookout for when they go to a website?
Yep, that's actually a really good question. And it comes up all the time with our customers. So I'll give you some specific examples. So we offer a free tool that's out there on the WordPress plugin library. It's free, and it plugs into WordPress sites. So that plugin actually will detect bots and traffic that's hitting a website, and it'll tell you what's human, what's a bot, what's not. And it also show you good bots as well. So there are good bots out there. And I think that's the confusion for most people when they talk about automation. They think any traffic on their website is actually good traffic. So they'll look at their SEO ratings, which are search engine optimization ratings for their website, and say, hey, look, I have this great traffic coming in now. I did a campaign last week. I see my search engine stuff go way up. What's really important is to actually look at that traffic. So obviously one of the big signals that most people miss is really looking at the search engine traffic coming in from the website. It may look like a good scanner, but it's really important to understand the difference between a good scanner and a bad scanner that's out there, because there's a ton of fake Google bots. There's a ton of fake SEO scanners out there. And the first indication that we tell people to look out for, if they're not using our tool, obviously, if they're using our tool, they'd be able to tell right away. But the first thing to look out for is an unusual spike in traffic on your site. Don't just think that, hey, my campaigns are working. Sometimes when people publish campaigns, they inadvertently give pointers to bad guys out there. And that search engine optimization is the bad guys actually scoping their site to see if they can actually take advantage of that as well. I'll give you a specific example. We had a company in Europe that was doing car rental. They saw a huge spike in SEO traffic. In this case, luckily, they had our tool on there, and we noticed a huge number of pages that were on their site that were actually totally not related to their business. So unfortunately, someone put mail order bride information for Russian mail order brides. They had a couple of porn sites linked on there. So they had literally hacked his site, installed blind pages, so he didn't know the pages were there. And they were using other places to redirect traffic to his website, but to the blind pages, so not to his pages. So his SEO traffic went up huge, but unfortunately, it's not the kind of SEO traffic that you really want to have that kind of search engine optimization stuff. You don't want to see that on your website. So we notified them and said, hey, look, you have these new pages that were created. They clearly do not look like car rental pages and something that you would put on your site. We let him know, and then obviously he was able to tear those down. But because his admin page had been hacked, he didn't have any idea that it was even there. And so we always tell people, remain vigilant. Spikes in activity are always, they're not always good. It's great if your campaigns are working, but you really need to be vigilant and understand that all of the main tools that are out there, like the search engine tools, are all being compromised. And if they don't come from specific IP addresses that are known by Google and known by some of the common ones like Off-Res and a few others, then you want to be very cautious in that traffic and make sure you understand where it's coming from and who it's from.
Wow, I didn't realize that because, I've got a lot of clients, who are, I won't name them, but they're obsessed, with Google rankings, SEO and all that, and I just didn't realize that, just because you have spike in traffic, that it could mean that it could be a malicious actor. I'd never even thought of that. Wow, that really makes my eyes open up to that. Now, what are the defense methods today to combat bots? I know, back to getting to phishing, we have all the stuff out there now, what people need to look out for, blah, 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 ransomware, so forth. But again, once again, I have not really come across any defense mechanisms for combating a bot. With the traditional security technologies like firewalls, network intrusion devices, would they have any effect on this, or is there another specialized tool that's needed? Could you expand more on this, please?
Sure. Yeah, most people today are able to put WAF. There's actually a lot of free WAF tools out there. So Web Application Firewall, or WAF, what we commonly refer to WAF, is normally installed. We actually have WAF built into our tool, and that's usually the first detection tool or threat mitigation tool that most people are commonly using. Unfortunately, and you can see publications recently from Pokemon, which is the IBM published paper that came out, about 50% of the traffic that lands on WAF, that's bad traffic, so bots, et cetera, that traffic, unfortunately, is getting through WAF. So they're not able to block really common bots. Most of what WAF does is provide bad IP addresses and very clear signature type items that are easy to identify, but also require the IT guy to make, have some kind of intervention in that tool. And I think that's really the big issue with WAF and why WAF is easily defeated today, is it really requires IT admins to really spend a lot of time, grabbing lists of IP addresses, dropping those in the tool, blocking. So it's really a kind of block and tackle. And unfortunately, it's also after the effect, right? So as WAF is broken down and people get past that defense, it then lands on pages that the IT wants to block. And, these attackers are getting further into the network. And that's normally the trigger for most of the IT guys that, hey, we had an attack that got through WAF. So again, the number's not from us, but we see the same numbers, or roughly around the same percentage. It's about roughly about 40 to 50% of the attacks are actually getting past WAF, and really requires some type of new defense. And that's really what bot mitigation is really this new advanced layer of protection that really looks at the traffic and tries to understand in a very simple and basic way, is this a human being or is this a bot? And that's really the whole breakdown. You know, we operate at layer 7 just like WAF operates at layer 7. And the traffic that we see, you know, for bots is really trying to distinguish, is this guy doing the same thing over and over again, which is clearly indicative of a bot? And if he is doing the same thing over again, then we look at it closer and say, okay, what can we throw at him? So we'll actually challenge or take a defensive posture with that bot and challenge them to do things. And if it is a bot doing the same thing over and over again, it'll quickly fail. And I can talk a little bit more about our technology, but in general, this whole bot mitigation piece really needs to be ratcheted up. You need to have something besides WAF and the common tools out there for detection and mitigation. You need to step it up. Unfortunately, this traffic looks exactly like a human. That scanner thing that I mentioned, you know, they look just like a real scanner. They're actually using exactly the same programs as a real scanner is using, but they've taken them and turned them into, unfortunately, repurposed them for nefarious means. And that's really a difficulty that most IT guys have. I think the other big piece that I kind of glossed over is it needs to be automated. Almost every single customer that we talk to is so bogged down with the threats that you mentioned. They're bogged down with phishing and these other attacks. They do not have the time to go in and actually continually monitor the tool. They don't have time to go in and pump IP addresses. So they're so overburdened with all the threats that are out there that they just don't have time to actually look at this. So what most of our customers are asking for is something that's totally automated, something that just works out of the box. They plug it in the network and it stops all these attacks for them. And it goes pretty much on an autonomous basis to actually block those attacks. So I think that's one of the key things. If people are looking for tools out there, they're most likely going to be looking for autonomous tools that just do the work for them, and they don't have to, you know, I think, again, from that same Pokemon study from IBM, most IT guys have about 70 tools, security tools that they're actually using on their network. So imagine trying to manage 70 tools. It's really a difficult job. And, you know, if all those tools require some intervention from the IT guy, he's either going to have a huge staff or he's going to split his time up among all those tools. And unfortunately, you know, something's going to get by him.
Okay. Well, I've been at your website, and can you go over your two products, the Bot RX Detects and the Bot RX Protects?
Sure. So Bot RX Detects is our free tool, and that's the one I mentioned. We deliver it a couple of different ways, but our Detects tool is basically a free tool. It is delivered through a plugin for WordPress. So if people have a WordPress plugin out there, you know, if you're familiar with WordPress plugins, they're very simple to install. It literally takes about a minute to install a WordPress plugin. You download it, you get an API key from us, you plug that in, and boom, it goes off and it starts detecting bots right away on your website. So we also deliver it. We can deliver it in a number of different ways. If people want to hard code our code into their website, we deliver it that way to a lot of people. And then if they want to deliver it through Google Tag Manager, we have ways to do that. So basically, once the code is delivered on their site, our tool goes to work. It installs both a client-side component, so that's actually looking at the client or the person or tool being used to visit your website. So like a browser is what a common client. Some of these other tools out there have JavaScript, run on JavaScript. We can inject into that environment. And then we also have a server-side component, which looks at the traffic coming in on the server side. So those two pieces actually report up to our cloud. So we have what we call the Detects Cloud, and that's where we analyze the traffic offline. So we have a huge data repository there, you know, billions of transactions every day from a number of different sources. We analyze that data, and then we obviously feed back into our models. So give you like a simple use case. If we see a Google scanner bot show up, we'll look at the IP addresses for that Google scanner bot. We know what they look like coming from Google, so we would know exactly what IP addresses, what that signature would look like. And if we see a fake one, we can quickly detect it and know immediately that it's a rogue scanner or, you know, some kind of rogue bot of some kind. So we continually update that model. Again, that's a great source. When we first created it, we felt that it probably wasn't too robust because people couldn't block. So unfortunately, it only detects and you can't block for that solution because we are not in line. But it actually has turned out to be, in that use case I gave you earlier of the guy understanding that, hey, someone had parked some really bad sites onto his site, and basically his infrastructure was being used to support someone else's bad infrastructure, then we realized, hey, quickly, this is of value. So we send reports from that dtext tool to customers. We can send them a daily report, a weekly report, or a monthly report. They automatically get it. We also are building an application that'll link into it, so they'll be able to have an application on their phone and set alerts, and IT guys will immediately be able to get alerts when they see a high-risk bot or a high-traffic bot coming in, hitting their website. So we will trigger it to alerts and other things like that. But it's great because it is free. We're really trying to help out. Pretty much even myself, I have a couple of websites I build on WordPress. I use for business that I do on the side, some consulting. I use it. It's been really helpful to actually see and understand good bots, bad bots. So we really break it down very simply for people. It's good bots, bad bots, and and basically human beings who's visiting my site. And it works really well together with some of the analytics that come across from Google Analytics and others if you're using those. So it's just another piece of information that you can use to actually help protect your site. So that's our dtext product.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead. Perfect. You want any questions about that one, or was that clear enough?
Yeah, no, go ahead. Can you go to your other product?
Sure, and our ProText product is an inline solution. So that's our full product that's able to both detect as well as block threats coming in. So it's really great compared to most of the other tools that are out there in that it goes to work right away as soon as you plug it into your network. So a lot of the tools that are out there today rely on behavioral techniques, and they actually have to sit in line with your traffic for a long amount of time. They need to basically understand what's a good visitor to your site look like before they can actually start blocking or identifying the bad ones. We don't do that in our case. We actually use what we call moving target defense on our ProText solution. And the moving target defense works in a manner of actually proactively confusing or deflecting bots when they land on your site. So so because we are a proxy server, we sit in line with traffic. We can actually get in the session. So if we see something comes in that looks like a bot, we then challenge the bot itself. So if you're familiar with reCAPTCHA, that actually challenges a user like you and I. Unfortunately, it doesn't work because there's a lot of reCAPTCHA services out there that actually defeat CAPTCHA as well. But what we do is similar, but we're not challenging the user. So the user doesn't have to take any action. We challenge the bot. So as a bot comes in, we'll transform the request. So let's say the most simple use case would be the username, login, and password credentials. So we will actually change the variables in the web page so that if someone wrote a routine to say, submit my password, under, password one, submit it, the variable now disappears. So unless it's a browser that automatically knows that password credential has been updated, they will not be able to react. So any kind of script or any kind of automation that does the same thing more than once, we will automatically challenge it and deflect it almost immediately. So if they don't deliver, we use things like tokens, we use encryption, we use timestamping. We roughly do about a combination of 160,000 different things when a request comes in from a browser or an agent. We'll change a variety of things in a random fashion. So any kind of script and automation basically stops working on the second transaction, which is pretty much in internet terms immediately within, a few milliseconds only. We'll actually block that. It allows us to actually really flip the bit on the bad guys, because now they're the ones that would have to constantly change their scripts, which is almost impossible for them, right? So it basically becomes too costly for them to actually do business on any of the websites that we protect. Because imagine trying to decode encryption keys and try to figure out what actually happened. We don't normally throw up. A lot of people just block threats. We don't normally block. We throw up blank pages. We really attempt to confuse and disorient the attackers and just make it not worth their while to actually come and visit those sites anymore. They'll go away and find much easier targets out there, and that's really the core piece behind our technology. We also do use other techniques. So as I mentioned, we still use our data cloud. Some threats that are out there today are actually best to identify using fingerprinting. So we fingerprint things like PanMJS, Sikuli, Sikuli X, those are common attack tools that are out there today. So we do fingerprint. And then obviously in this world, unfortunately, you know, in the world that we operated in, new threats are coming up all the time. So we have that large data cloud out there as well. We constantly analyze new threats that we see, and we'll fingerprint those as well and throw those back into our tool. So we'll update our tool periodically with new threat information and get those threats out. So if you think about it, some threats are just easier to identify right off the bat. So as soon as you identify them, you can get them off the network. It's better for the customer. But really, we're one of the few guys out there that use a combination of moving target defense. We do some behavioral, and then we do a ton of fingerprinting to really identify new threats. So that whole combination of those three things really helps us have the best efficacy. We probably knock off right off the bat. In fact, we commit to our customers basically 4-9 accuracy. So we will clearly remove, you know, 99.99% of the bots that are out there without blocking any good users, which is really the main worry of most customers that do business online, is they don't want you to block known customers or good customers for them. They really only want you to concentrate on blocking the bots and the threats.
Okay, now who is your typical customer base? It sounds like really anybody could use your product. Like, is it the SMBs, the Fortune 500, or perhaps a mixture of both?
It's really a mixture of both. We started off heavily on the financial side, so we have a ton of big banking customers. So we protect a lot of banks. Obviously, those are the guys that have probably the most to lose from their customer base. You know, they have everything from, if you think about what most banks do today, everything from stock transactions. Some banks, some of our big bank customers have insurance that they sell. They also do, obviously, you know, take care of people's money and financial things like loans, et cetera. So the banking industry is probably the most frequently attacked because those are really hard assets that people can steal. But we also do a lot of e-commerce. So anyone that does online business, e-commerce sites are big for us. We do also protect a lot of ticketing agencies. So we have huge ticketing, primarily on the government infrastructure side, like trains. We always say trains, planes, and automobiles. So you know, that use case I mentioned earlier about online car use case where people are renting cars online, that's a big use case for us. So I would say anywhere there's large assets online, price scraping is a big problem where people's prices are being stolen and then people are publishing their own pricing. Those large databases are out there. So we do a lot of that kind of work for e-commerce people as well. But in general, that's probably that covers most of the high-end paying customers, but really anywhere in the mid-range. So, you know, everything from small mom-and-pop organizations who are selling something as simple as pies online. You know, we also have a few people who are doing consulting, and we have quite a few people that actually do IT resources. So there's a lot of people that outsource their IT to third parties online. A lot of those guys are actually using our products as well. And then probably the one that's really growing for us now is education. Unfortunately, I hate to be topical, but we do see a big shift on the education side. They're doing a lot more online. So people are not only working from home more, but they're actually getting their education from home as well. So education are really being targeted, even for, you know, if you think about high school education, they do a lot more of work online as well. So in the recent months, especially with the coronavirus thing going on, we see a big uptick in the education side. And we're doing a lot more with universities and even lower education people like high school, et cetera, that are doing more business online.
Okay. Do you have any customer success stories you can share with us or any client testimonials or any use cases you can talk about?
Sure. I think we've got a few posted on our website. The ticketing one that we mentioned was interesting. So a couple of our customers are actually in Asia, and our roots from the company actually grew out of Asia. So we have a large customer base in Asia. So probably the most prevalent one would be a company that does railroad sales online in Asia. So that one is very similar use case. If anyone in the U.S. has tried to buy a ticket from Ticketmaster, unfortunately, bots are the first thing that go in and buy the tickets, right? So we, unfortunately for you and me and the consumer, we have to go and buy our tickets usually from the secondhand guy, right? The guy who's scalping tickets online, because bots have already gone in and bought up all those tickets. And I think if you can see some of the recent publications, it's a big problem for artists. A lot of artists are offering to their fan base, right, tickets first before they launch into Ticketmaster and some of the other services out there because they're getting scalped so badly. So unfortunately, most of the tickets for trains and all that in Asia are actually, these are owned by the government. So because they're government agencies, they're responsible to the citizens, and the citizens have just launched huge campaigns against the ticketing agency. You know, they refuse to pay taxes because they can't get tickets. And the big use case that we saw is around Chinese New Year and large travel times like that. So in pretty much all of Asia, every country during the full moon or the Lunar New Year, during Chinese New Year or Lunar New Year, everyone wants to go home and see their family. So they all go online and buy tickets. So unfortunately, people created bots that was going in and buying up all those tickets in advance. So all the citizens who wanted to get home couldn't get tickets. They had to buy them on the secondhand market, which is also illegal, unfortunately, in those countries. But the bad guys have figured out how to do it. And so what we did is we parked our product. We put Protex in front of that those transactions. And now we eliminated literally 90% of the traffic that they had was from bots. So about 92%, if I remember correctly, during the peak buying times, which are usually Chinese New Year and any major holiday for those particular countries, we actually stopped all those bots from purchasing tickets and really reduced the number of complaints. In fact, there was even strikes, believe it or not, citizen strikes against those companies and protests for, you know, for the bots actually buying up tickets. So it was an interesting use case. We didn't expect it to be so prevalent, especially 90%. That's a huge amount of traffic. And the bots were relentless. They not only did purchasing of tickets, but when we started blocking, they actually came back later and tried to do what we call DDoS attack or denial of service attack by just doing high volume attacks to try and break our defense down, because they felt that if they could defeat us with a DDoS, that the that government body would have to redirect traffic around our protection mechanism, and then they would be able to get back in. So we were able to actually deflect both the DDoS as well as the ticket scalping attempt. So it was an interesting use case. And I mean, we're talking huge volumes of transaction, billions of transactions in the course of one day. And that site normally only sees in the millions. So we were, you know, at least an order of magnitude, if not two orders of magnitude of traffic on a day.
Now, there are tons of cybersecurity vendors out there. How many vendors are out there that actually specialize in, like, what you do? And why should a customer come to you and say, hey, John, I want your services versus this other company that does bot service as well, or bot detection as well, too? What's your differentiating brand, in other words?
Yeah, good point. I mean, there are, I think, roughly in this space, there's roughly 10 guys out there. And again, just like I won't help the bad guys, I'll try not to help my competition and name them. But there's about 10 guys in the bot mitigation space. If you do search for bot mitigation, you'll figure out who they are relatively easily. Probably the big differentiating factor between us and them is almost every one of the guys out there selling today, when they go in line, I mean, most of them are using proxy service similar to what we do, but unfortunately, they have to sit in line with traffic for sometimes 60, 90 days and analyze the traffic coming through before they can actually go in and do any kind of blocking. They need to understand what is good traffic and what is bad traffic, and then they can actually go in. And then, unfortunately, for most of them also, every time there's a new threat, they have to analyze that threat, fingerprint it, or create what we call a threat intelligence package for that threat, and then deploy that on that tool. So this takes a lot of time, and unfortunately, it's that same thing we talked about. What we're hearing from our customers is it requires the IT guy to actually do something. He has to actually take action on his own. He has to go in and interface with their tool as well as his own SIM tools. And we just felt that was a bad model, and that's not what we're hearing from our customers. Our customers just wanted to work day one, and they wanted to work without any major interface from them. So that's really where we're different. We go to work, so we're really almost what we would call a plug-and-play appliance. Again, we deliver our appliance, whether it's virtual appliance, we can deliver, we just deliver code. You put that on your VPC and AWS or one of the other big clouds, or you can install it on your premise. We don't care, wherever you want. You take our code and drop it in. And the time you plug it into your network, we immediately go to work identifying and blocking bots if you want to turn it on right away. Most people want to sit in line and analyze traffic, what we call monitor mode for our product. We'll sit and monitor and just show them, like, hey, it's working, and then they'll go into blocking mode immediately. So that's really the difference. We're plug and play. We update offline, so any kind of analysis and data analytics that we do that offline, and we feed back into the tool. You know, customers can turn on automatic updates if they want, or they can, you know, pull those updates down at their leisure. So we try to be the most flexible, offer the most flexible model to our customers. And in general, we're one of the lower cost ones out there because of our roots in the, you know, in the free space. We get a lot of free data from our customer base. We obviously give back by offering them the free tools I talked about earlier and on DTEX, but it also allows us to actually, you know, do a lot of this work offline and really lowers our cost. Most of our infrastructure is on the customer side, so it's at the customer's burden. They're paying for the data, they're paying for, the tool itself, obviously from us, but this lowers our costs and allows us to concentrate on analyzing that data in the cloud. So we offer, I would say, probably one of the most reasonable services out there at a pretty cost effective. And then for the smaller enterprises like education, we do offer education discounts and things like that. You know, we really want to help out some of the education side. We do a lot of work with interns on our side. So we have a lot of interns in a couple of different major universities around and, you know, want to continue to do that work and to build up the infrastructure for cybersecurity. So we do offer quite significant discounts for education side as well.
Okay, excellent. Now, let's go back and talk about this one topic, the moving target defense as a solution. I mean, there are other vendors out there, you know, they're using MTD, so it does have, you know, some kind of security application beyond the box. What exactly is an MTD?
Sure. Yeah, I think if you look at the roots of MTD, it was really a phrase coined by the government. So if you go do a search on there, you'll see one of the government bodies was actually talking about moving target defense. And really what it is, as I mentioned earlier, it's really flipping the bit on the bad guys. So it's a proactive approach to network security rather than a reactive. Most of the network infrastructure out there today reacts to bots. So a bot attacks you and you create a countermeasure or you do something to stop that bot. And then the bot immediately, this is the unfortunate thing with bots, if the bot is blocked or deflected in any way, that guy knows it, and he immediately goes to work and creates another countermeasure and comes back and actually tries to, you know, retool so he can get into your site. So bots, unfortunately, are relentless. The attackers are relentless, and they really never go away. So what we do is we actually increase the variety of responses that attacker sees on the website. So it's really, if you look at it, in a nutshell, it causes the attack surface to expand exponentially. So we expand the attack surface that the attacker sees. So he never sees the same thing twice. If he lands on a page and tries to create a script, that script will stop working the next time he uses it. And it just increases the threat, the threat for him, the threat landscape. It reduces that, but it increases the complexity of the site itself so that they just have to do a thousand times more work to attack those specific sites, and it confuses them, puts up roadblocks pretty much every step of the way that attacker comes, when an attacker comes into a website. We're really causing it to, spend a lot more time and money to try and get through those defenses, and he never sees the same thing twice, right? So you can imagine the amount of work that we create for those guys. So we do that dynamically. So when we talk about dynamic changes to that attack surface and the cost prohibitiveness of it is really the key technology behind moving target defense.
Okay. What are the advantages of the MTD?
So as I mentioned earlier, it's really about starting to work day one. So if people have vulnerabilities, so I mentioned the scanner use case earlier, if they have vulnerabilities in their network that are arising from maybe they didn't do a patch, they didn't do an update. So the great thing about what we do is because we are, we commonly refer to ourselves as a zero-day threat prevention, they may not have to update that patch. We would actually automatically block that for them using the moving target defense because we go to work day one. So as threats come in and try to attack that vulnerability, our product's going to be in front of that transaction, and we'll be able to actually block it much easier. So the day one aspects of what we do is really great. We're super scalable and lightweight. As I mentioned, we'll be coming out. We'll have an announcement here in the next few days. We work with a lot of network component guys, so load balancers, even application servers. So we're going to be announcing something here shortly that will basically be a very scalable and lightweight all-in-one box. So if you think about it, it'll have load balancer, it'll have WAF, it'll have our product sitting right together on the same box with an application server. So super easy to install, super lightweight, and something that someone could just really, again, looking at that plug-and-play kind of use case where we just plug it into your network and it goes to work right away. And compared to what we do as well, I didn't mention this earlier, but we try not to collect any personal data from any of the websites that we protect. The use of collecting IP addresses, I think some people think that those are still personal data because they can be tracked back to an individual user. But I think for most cases, IP address is the only thing we take out there in the web today that could be even closely considered PI. Most people, I think most businesses don't consider IP addresses as personal information. But we don't collect any personal information about anyone. So we are totally hands-off. So if you're working in a tightly controlled environment like healthcare, government, and other areas, we don't collect that PII. So we're very safe from an organizational standpoint. People don't have to worry about us collecting it. If we're compromised, that information would be out there in the wild. So that's one of the other key big differences for us. And really, in general, we love to work with other security components. You know, as I mentioned, we're working with load balancer guys. We're working with other network protection tools like WAF. We have it built into ours. We're happy to work with other ones. We don't think siloed technology where you're just siloed by yourself, you're a standalone tech, that just really doesn't cut it in our eyes. We really need to fit into the network that's available today. We're not going to, you know, create some special niche for ourselves out there and have people have to buy all kind of specialized tools. We think you need to be able to plug into any network that's out there today and be as flexible as possible. Otherwise, you're going to just not be as wide-ranging and as diverse as what's needed in today's market.
Okay. Now, how can defenders implement the MTD to protect against bots? So how can like a little business like mine use that to protect my stuff?
Yeah, good question. Really, there's a few other people out there offering moving target defense, so it's actually an interesting market piece today. But in general, if you using our technology, as I mentioned, it's just plug and play, right? So our moving target defense is in the background, and it works. But there are other people that are using it as well today. But in general, what we do that is really game changing is we're just changing the response back to the attacker. So we do things like change tokens, we change cookies, we add encryption. I think the most important thing of what we do when we say moving target is we're literally changing that randomly. So we have roughly about 160,000 different combinations of what we define as moving target. So we literally move things like website URLs, we move website variables, we use website responses. So everything in that website, we're constantly moving it around by using these different deflection techniques like tokens, et cetera, and even changing website variables. So it's almost impossible for the attacker to really decode all that, especially when you add encryption on top of it. So we do encrypt a lot of this, and it really prevents the attacker from really seeing what we're doing as well as seeing where they can actually target the site. So I think I would suggest people read up on it. There's some interesting articles out there on moving target defense that were posted by the government a few years back. And we feel strongly it's a great way to actually, you know, stop this constant barrage of threats out there today.
Okay. Now, does the federal government make use of your products and services?
We can't really talk about that, unfortunately. We are talking to several government organizations. We started primarily on the local government side, so we are talking to local government folks as well. We have a, we have huge government installs in Asia, so we do have quite a bit of work there. As I mentioned, you know, infrastructure there on ticketing and all that is are usually owned by the government. So we do have those that I mentioned earlier, and we can talk about those. But in the U.S., we do continue to work with local governments, and we think it's actually a great fit for them. Most of the government agencies that we see are still on-premise. A lot of them have not migrated to the cloud yet. So we work great on-premise, which is good. Our tool is obviously targeted for cloud-based in the U.S. We rework the tool slightly from some of the on-premise stuff that we do in Asia. We reworked it to be more cloud compliant and more cloud friendly here in the U.S. So we do work in cloud as well, but most of the government agencies, unfortunately today, are still using on-premise data centers and are not big on the clouds yet, but I think it'll eventually get there.
Okay. Well, cool. As we approach now the last segment of our show, I just kind of wanted to go into just the cybersecurity threat landscape in general. Just a couple of issues I wanted to kind of get your insight on. One of the hot-button topics last year in 2019 was about holding the C-suite more accountable, meaning if a cyber attacker happens, immediately fire the CIO or the CISO. My approach is, you know, take a holistic view, see what happened, and then from there kind of determine who's at fault, who's to blame, and then, I guess for lack of a better term, invoke punishment. I don't think the CIO or the CISO's head should roll, you know, just immediately after. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I would agree with you. I think it's a tough business out there. I mean, I would not want to be a CISO.
Sure.
We talk to C-suite people on a, you know, on a daily basis. That's normally who we talk to when we talk about these kind of threats. And we you know, give information to a lot of CISOs as well. So it's a tough place to be. It's a tough job to have. And I really respect these guys because they really put their reputation on the line. So I agree with you 100%, Robbie. I do not think that, you know, immediately should be firing the CISO and that they should take 100% responsibility for any kind of breaches. Unfortunately, in this, you know, society that we are in today, everybody wants to scapegoat and hit people, you know, look for the easy win and just fire those people right away. I think it also actually can, in some cases, cause detriment to the network security, right? Bringing in someone new, although maybe bringing in some new ideas, it definitely doesn't always solve the problem. The guy may not know the network structure. He may not know legacy equipment that's there. And that's really the challenge, I think, for most CISOs, right? This business is changing on a daily basis. And, it, you know, there's legacy things that people have to deal with. There, you know, you make choices on hardware and infrastructure, and it's not easy to change those in many cases. You know, you're stuck with budgets. I think budgets for CISOs are not where they need to be as well. That's part of the problem. You know, these guys are sometimes piecemealing things together for themselves and, you know, doing the best they can with the budgets they have. So I think that's also, in my opinion, and what we see, a large part of the blame is that they're just not staffed up and budgeted enough to really be effective. So it's not necessarily their fault.
Okay. But in other points, we keep hearing about nation-state threat actors, you know, North Korea, China, Russia, blah, blah, blah. You know, we now with the coronavirus, you know, who knows what's going to happen in this presidential election, not to get political here. But, you know, the use of deepfake technology, it's an AI tool, that actually can be used to mimic, you know, pretty well a person, like a well-known person. And that can actually be used in a phishing attack. Like, for example, someone could, you know, make a video of Joe Biden, make him look really real, and ask for donations, but really, you know, the individual is going to be steered towards a phony website. Money is going to go to some offshore account. Just two things here. Are you familiar with the deepfakes? And have you done any work with AI? Because it seems like artificial intelligence could be a good asset for what you're trying to do with, you know, detecting bots to learn in real time and to try to project in the future.
Yep. Actually, you're exact. Those are great points. So let's talk about deepfake first. Definitely, we see huge amounts of this type of activity. It largely comes in, as you mentioned, in the form of phishing, but we also do see it on websites, right? So almost all of us have, you mentioned like Facebook, et cetera, or through emails, but they're also using it to actually implant onto the info and onto web pages. So they're really prolific. And it's not just in the U.S. I mean, a lot of people are focusing here in the U.S. We actually have a huge experience with this overseas. You know, we have a ton of customers in China as well. And those customers, actually China is getting attacked almost, I would say in general, 10 times more than the U.S. And there's a lot of misinformation on their side. And primarily behind the Great Wall, right? There's this Great Wall, what we call the Great Firewall, sometimes referred to as the Great Wall of China. That piece is, you know, what's happening behind there is not normally well publicized by the government, but it's really prolific, and this misinformation from state actors and actors in general around the world is prolific inside the wall as well. So it's not something new, and I think people need to plug all those holes. You need to look at not just your Facebooks, but anywhere that information can be posted, in blogs, in LinkedIn, and other places like that, and other social media areas. Those are all important to actually stop that from happening.
Okay. Now, have you done any?
And then your second question, could you?
Was about AI or artificial intelligence. Have you done any work with bot art?
Got it. Yeah, so AI is also great. The interesting thing about AI, it's become so easy to use AI that not only us in the cybersecurity side are using AI, like we use AI every day. So we use AI and machine learning in our cloud. So our DFX cloud and our Protex cloud that I talked about earlier, we actually use AI to scan through that and sky through that and look for new threats and look for new information. So we use AI. Unfortunately, because AI is so prevalent today, the bad guys are also using AI as well. And that's a big problem for all of us. So as we put out threat defensive measures, I guarantee you the bot guys are out there today using AI to analyze that as well. And so it's a two-edged sword. It's great for us. It helps us. It also is being used by the bad guys and helps them as well. I don't think it's something that we can get away from. We need to have it. It's a huge resource. We always say AI does a great job of identifying anomalies, and that's how we use it, right? If you think about what we do in our data cloud, we use it to quickly identify anomalies. You still have to have someone go back and look at those anomalies and identify the ones that are bad and ones that are good. You know, because sometimes you do get false signals. But in general, it's an invaluable tool for us in the cybersecurity side, and it's actually becoming an easier to use every day. So that piece has actually been really helpful. And through our work with the universities, we actually have a lot of university kids. It's actually interesting for me as an old-timer that, you know, these kids are picking up AI and the tools that are available through the universities themselves. These guys are doing great work for us, and they're able to pick up on the AI side really, really quickly and identify threats for us. So we look forward to doing more with it, and also look forward to actually hopefully opening up some information on our tool and opening up some areas of our data lake to people to actually use it and access it.
Me too. Now, another hot topic is going to be that kind of emerged and died down and is coming back up again is the use of the Internet of Things or IoT. This is where everything's connected to one another in both the virtual and real worlds. I find this to be rather scary. You know, it just increases the attack surface for the cyber attacker with all this interconnectedness. Has BotRx done any work with the IoT? And, like, what are your thoughts on it? Do you have a smart home or a smart city, as the saying goes?
Yeah, I think all of us have, whether we know it or not, we have IoT vulnerabilities in our homes. Yet, I mean, my house, actually, I can turn my lights to obviously my doorbell and a few other, my thermostat. So all those things are actually being used by myself personally. So I definitely am worried about IoT security. It's interesting from BotRx standpoint, we actually also grew out of the IoT side. So we sit, we took our core moving target defense, and we build it down into a 2 megabyte client that actually sits on IoT devices and helps protect those devices. We sit on about latest tally is about 800,000 routers. So Wi-Fi routers that are out there in the wild today, we sit on about 800,000 and we protect those admin pages and admin login pages and a little bit behind the scenes on that. So we know the IoT side really well and are active in that environment today. And the stuff that we see actually scares me. I try to buy tools out there today that I feel have good infrastructure behind them. I'm definitely worried about the IoT side, but it is going to be a growing, you're exactly right when you talk about it as being an ever-expanding threat vulnerability area. You know, we really feel that there needs to be more work done into standards and more work done into actually protecting those IoT devices. I mean, most people throw them out there. They think of them as almost disposable devices where you're going to use them once and be done with them. So they don't put a lot of thought into the security side of them. But in our feeling, I mean, the government's tried to drive some of the IoT standards, but the stuff they've done is very basic. If you look at the recent standard in California that just requires you to have a changeable password on your IoT device, yes, that's helpful, but that is not, that's not what I would consider a viable long-range standard. So I think it's going to be up to the IT industry by itself to really get together and create some what I would consider more viable alternatives on the threat side and really develop some standards that make sense and are meaningful to help protect IoT devices, because they're not going away. Light sockets as well. So I have everything from switches to light sockets across the board. So it's just going to keep growing, and unfortunately, that puts us all at threat. So, I mean, to give an example, we know of a casino that was hacked. I think it's been published through one of our partners, but a casino that was actually hacked through a thermostat on a fish tank. So attackers were able to access the thermostat on the fish tank. They got into the network, and they were able to actually compromise the casino's network. And it's really gone crazy when you think about it. You know, basically any back door, any door into any kind of network, the attackers are really good at, and unfortunately using it.
Well, have you done any work with a new topic of cybersecurity insurance policies? As you implement your solutions, do customers kind of reach out to you for advice on that? That's kind of like another hot button topic, you know, here in cybersecurity.
Yeah, actually, good point. We actually have talked to a few insurance companies about giving their people who do business online, giving them discounts if they have our product. So there's actually quite a few insurance companies. I think most people should actually talk to their insurance companies. There's quite a bit of discounts being given by insurance companies if you have some of the latest technologies in place on cybersecurity side. You can actually get a discount on your insurance. And there's also insurance companies that literally sell cybersecurity policies, and most of us have $1 million to up to $10 million of, you know, per case of insurance on the cyber side, and they'll either require you to have something like bot mitigation in place or some other protective measures in place that they'll give you discounts for. So something that's coming up, we protect a lot of insurance companies as well as talk to them about what should be in place. So it's definitely going to keep growing and expanding. There, you know, that if you look at the recent breach last year, if I'm not mistaken, it was roughly around $300,000 per breach when you talk about per case. And now this year it's well over $1 million. So imagine a 3x growth in the cost of a breach in just 1 year. That's huge. It just shows you the volume of attacks that are out there, as well as the liability issue that insurance companies are facing, insurance companies and companies, unfortunately, are facing. So it's good. I think this will actually help us in the long run to develop, you know, good cybersecurity practices and for people to actually have better access to those tools.
Okay. Now, just two last questions here. How do you foresee the cyber threat landscape unfolding this year? Obviously, with the coronavirus, that's definitely changed the playing field, you know, with a lot more phishing attacks, you know, and so forth. What do you think the biggest threat's going to be this year?
That's a good question. I mean, it changes so quickly. It's always hard to predict. Maybe what we see in general from our data is we see two big categories of attacks. One is on the low end. So as I mentioned, you know, there's all these new websites being created, and a lot of people are doing more and more business online. And that's what we call the low end of the market. So almost no security in place, built our DTECS tool. We were just absolutely flabbergasted by the number of attacks on those sites. We were totally taken aback by it. We had to increase our server size because of it, believe it or not. But that really indicated to us that there's a lot of very simple tools out there and simple attack types that are being used on pretty much everyone. So no industry is free. I mean, I can give you like a specific example. We saw an attack on a very well-known airline out there today. And I think that airline just announced another attack yesterday. So the airline, it was a $20 tool that was being used to attack their site. So imagine for $20, you could do a huge amount of damage. And it didn't publish on the dark web. We picked it up on the dark web, but it was just a relentless attack. So that very simple low-end type tools, low-cost, but wide-ranging attacks, and it was a tool that was being used that was crowdsourced. So we didn't talk about this in the earlier discussion, but we do see a lot of crowdsourced tools where people are basically saying, hey, look, I built this tool. If you contribute to attacking this other airline, like, here's a tool to use for attacking this airline, Airline One. If you contribute to attacking airline number two, we'll give you free use of the tool for a week or a month. And they basically have this whole collaboration of bad guys online that are creating scripts for, and I was shocked when we first found this website, but every single airline, every single industry, we haven't found one industry that's not being exploited. So it's almost like a syndicate of people who are working together to basically steal assets from these companies. So that's that low-end piece that I mentioned. And then we see on the high end also a huge number of specific attacks. So similar to the low-end attacks, but very detailed attack consortium that's really focused on just attacking, let's say, a specific bank. So they'll say, hey, one guy finds a vulnerability. He says, hey, join up with me. I have all these great accounts set up. I'm going to do this type of attack. Join up with me, and then we'll get this. We'll get $1 million out of this bank, and they publicize that on the dark web. So those really high-level, sophisticated attacks that go very deep into the application layer. So most of the attacks I talked about on the low end are at the very surface layer of a network. So they'll be like the login page, or they'll be at the account creation page, or pricing, et cetera. These ones go deep into the application structure. They've camped on these sites for a long amount of time. They set up, they have infrastructure set up and ready to go for the attack, and they just need other people to basically contribute and deliver pieces of the puzzle for them. So I would say those two, so the rise of these, I guess if you want to call them mafias, online mafias, and super sophisticated or super simple tools are what we see as the future. Not that the guys in the middle are not being attacked. Those will definitely continue. But it's really what I would call highly specialized bad guys out there who are, you know, just becoming more and more sophisticated in their attacks and syndicates.
Well, finally, as you wrap up our show, we'll save, I guess, this question for last. What do you tell people and businesses what they can do best to mitigate the risk of cyber attack? I mean, we all are at risk of becoming a victim, but what can someone do to reduce that probability of becoming a victim? What do you normally tell people and businesses alike?
Yeah, good question. I think it's kind of a great one to wrap up on. I mean, for us, we tell people is, you know, keep everything up to date. It's really hard for IT. Sometimes they get blinded by the attack itself and don't realize the origination of the attack is really some simple update that they could have done on the network. You can see them all the time. They're published all the time. But in general, you know, keep your systems up to date. Keep your patches in place. constantly update your network infrastructure and never trust one component. I think this is where I talk to so many people and say, look, I have WAF in place. Why do I need another tool? As we deploy countermeasures to attackers, they are really great at getting by that stuff. It's their full-time job, just like we go to work every day to improve cybersecurity. It's these guys' full-time job to go out and attack people, and they're really good at it, and they're really diligent. They never give up, unfortunately. So we need to be cognizant of that and just, don't trust one piece of technology. The other thing is to also look at your network. Look at spikes in activity constantly. We highly recommend people use SIEM to basically have a single pane of glass view at their tools. As we mentioned, most people have multiple tools protecting their network, which is great, but they may not actually be able to swivel chair and open each individual tool and look at it. So we do highly recommend SIEM. I think SIEM has come down in quite a bit of price. We link our tools with all the major SIEMs out there, so Splunk, QRadar, a few of the others that are out there today. Those are probably the major ones that we see today, but there's a bunch of others as well. We build plugins, and we have a Splunk-based app out there today that you can link Splunk-based or Splunk with our tool. But the SIEM is really important to give you a single pane of view, and then you can add on things like orchestration where you can use SIEM to actually send commands on your network side as well. But in general, having a view into multiple tools is really important. We understand the IT guys are taxed to protect everything, but setting up those alerts in the SIEM and monitoring multiple tools is super important as well. And I think it's a very low cost and simple thing that most people can do to protect the network. So vigilance is really key. Look for those spikes. And I think finally, the last thing was use as many important data sources as you can. Get on blogs, trusted sources of information out there. There's just like your show, Robbie. It's a great blog, right? Get on blogs, get on places that can deliver information about the latest attacks and what people see on the dark web. Understand where other people are getting attacked. So it's really about staying current and being vigilant into what's going on in the cybersecurity side out there today. So I talk to as many people as I can. I attend as many webinars and industry events as I can just to stay up to date and know what's going on. And I think it really behooves people to do the same.
Okay. Well, John, we thank you for your time this afternoon. It's definitely been an insightful, a lot of information packed podcast about bots. I never really realized how busting that they can be. Thanks for your time, and we look forward to having you again here in the near future.
Great. Thank you, Robbie. I look forward to it. Hopefully we didn't scare too many people out there. But thanks for having me on, and I look forward to the next one.
Thanks for your time.
All right. Bye now. Thank you.